you very much for asking me here. So I won't introduce myself. I mean, we've already done the introduction bit. Please, if at any time you feel like asking a question, please feel free to just stop me, put your hand up, just cough, stand up, anything, and I'm happy to stop and discuss or any issue. How we will run this today is I'll spend about 35 minutes or so, hopefully. I mean, I won't talk as much, but I'll give you the necessary information. And then we'll just stop for a few minutes and just turn around in twos and threes, and we'll discuss a few scenarios, which I think you've been given in the handout, third page of the handout. We'll just discuss that, and then we'll see about how, as ministers in your parishes, some sort of application of what we've discuss today. So it's not a learning session, it's a discussion session. So I really want you guys to relax, and girls in the lounge over there, the girls and boys to relax and just enjoy this. Okay, so we live sex cells. We all know that. We see it everywhere. Sex sells cars. This is really best with the lights off. It's just that the handbrake. That's okay. I mean, really, it doesn't matter.
Just about that brake sound.
Well done. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, that's, you know, so that's used to sell, I think that's an Audi maybe, a Volvo. And it's used to, this is actually my favorite, the BMW. You know, so sex sells cars. But this is actually really pretty. Sex sells coffee. It even sells milk, believe it or not. And hamburgers. And this is actually the best. It even sells toilet paper. So you see, sex sells. But what we do know is that the world, and you're asking me how do Christians see that, non-Christians see Christians, the secular world sees us as sort of these dowdy old Puritans, the poor Puritans. I think they really were intersex or so, Kamal tells me. But, you know, with these Victorian values and like real killjoys, you know, and we are boring, we can't. Which is why I think really people get shocked when I get out and say I'm a Christian and I talk about sex. But you see, the thing is that we as Christians should really be proud. We need to be out and proud about our sexology, about our sex, because we have the real answer to good sex. We who know the Word of God, who believe in God, know that we have the best sex message ever. And we should never be ashamed. We should never feel that we have to step back from getting out there and publicizing the fact that we have the message for good sex. So, and just look at Genesis. I mean, you guys are the ones who should be telling me this, you know it, but I'm just putting it out to you, that when you look at Genesis 1 and 2, it tells us that, you know, we are made in the image of God, so I mean the Trinity, we are made in this relational image for a relationship with God and a relationship with our fellow man and woman. Not necessarily always a sexual relationship, but a close, intimate relationship. That's what we are created for. We are created male and female. So right from the word go, we were created as male and female. And you know, when you look, for those of you who studied anatomy, you realize that even the plumbing, you know, we don't have time to talk about sexual response. The sexual response of male and female is so complementary. It's just beautiful how they complement each other. Our genitals, our genital structure, the plumbing is so beautifully complementary. I mean, you know, no human could possibly design anything so wonderfully matching as a penis and a vagina. And so when God said be fruitful and multiply, the last time I checked, that involved sex. And so, you know, sexual intercourse, sex, good sex was built in right from them. And then, and this is what I really love, that God looked at man and woman, looked at Adam and Eve, and he just didn't say it was good. He said it was very good. So when God says something is very good, this is the biblical pattern. And the challenge to all of you, young men and women, is really to be out there and be preaching this good message. However, unfortunately, as we all know, you know, we mess things up. And in this messed up world, this perfectly gendered, perfect pattern of sexuality is then completely confused. And we have examples all around. Today we are only going to look at pornography, but we've got images and examples of messed up sexuality all around us. We just need to look at some basic things like messed up gender. We talk of heterosexual and homosexual. I'm coming just days after the Mardi Gras in Sydney. But it's even more complex than that. We got cross-dressers, we got transsexuals. I don't know whether you guys are in churches where you might have people who cross-dress or have problems with gender identity. And, you know, there's problems which were not meant to be. And then even, and so there's sexual dysfunctions which were not meant to be. And then we have the problems with our wrong thinking. And when we talk of wrong thinking, we move sex from what God made it to be, which is a pure pleasure in His presence, to something that is about our self-gratification rather than what God meant it to be. So, you know, when you look at how the world sees sex, we have allowed that to permeate us and our churches. Now, I belong to what's called the World Association of Sexual Health, which is the umbrella body. This year, I put in for a symposium. We are meeting in Glasgow in June. I put in for a symposium on sex and religion. And because the guy who, normally they are a bit dicey about letting me on the platform, but this time because the guy who's running it is a professor, a good friend of mine, he said, yes, I'll do that. So we've got a Hindu and an Islamic girl, and then we've got a Christian who's presenting. My son's going to be doing the presentation for Christianity and sex, so it should be interesting. But the World Association of Sexual Health, in their Declaration of Sexual Rights, says that no specific sexual behavior should be judged morally wrong. Rather, both the individual right of choice and the multiplicity of human sexuality should be recognized as long as there's no coercion, exploitation, as in age, power, or abuse. We call this the ethics of consent. So consensual sex, whatever it may be, is okay. Can you see how that can permeate into there is no right or wrong? But if it is consensual, nothing matters. And, you know, dear friends of mine who are homosexuals, we always have this discussion. What does it matter? As long as it doesn't harm or, you know, hurt anyone else. And when it comes to pornography, it's like the current thinking is the internet provides users with opportunity to satisfy their sexual needs in constructive ways. So there are no real boundaries. It's there, and if you use it constructively, you know, to express yourself sexually, maybe to get satisfaction in masturbation when you feel a bit stressed, or, you know, if you want to communicate with someone, it is okay as long as you use it constructively. Can you see how the boundaries are just... So that's what the sort of law, the larger paradigm or the larger picture into which we just want to look at one little block today, and that is pornography. So what is pornography? This is a definition. Now, it is only one little bit of explicit sex. Now, when we look at sexually explicit material, and just to look, for instance, at the internet, although it's not just the internet that we talk about in pornography, it's magazines or it is videos, anything that is sexually explicit, made specifically such that it is made to arouse, We don't just look at pornography, but we look at things like sex shops on the internet. You know, all those lovely, wonderful, weird and wonderful toys that we can get. Sex work on the internet. You know, advertisements for sex work. And good things like sex education on the internet. I mean, I myself direct a graduate program in sexual health on the internet. It's an online program. Sex contacts. Online sex, cyber sex, online dating agencies, and then sexual subcultures. I don't know whether you're aware of it, but if you're a homosexual, there's particular websites where you can go to meet other homosexuals. If you're a homosexual who's particularly interested in a particular fetish of bondage, there's a mini website you can go. So you can sort of burrow down into a subculture and find a place on the internet. However, if you look at the word pornography, the word porne, I think you people are the Greek and Hebrew scholars. It means prostitute? Greek? Hebrew? Something, isn't it? Porne? Greek? And graphion, I'm probably not saying it right, means to write. So it's really something graphic about prostitution. So that's how the word even came into being. So, today we build a whole language around pornography. There are words that are used like pornosphere, that is a sphere of looking at pornography. Pornographication, we talk of porn aesthetics, that is people who judge what is beautiful by what they see in porn. However, what we know that in most heterosexual pornography, men and women all have perfect bodies. You know, they are the airbrushed, perfect little rosebuds of genitalia. And perfect plastic boobs that just don't jiggle. This is one of my students told me this. Because there's a course that was run by a professor, an American professor, that's called Sexual Attitude Reassessment. He's from like Bible Belt. Calls himself a Baptist minister, and he runs this sexual attitude reassessment. Came and ran a workshop here, and he was doing these, he was running these workshops where he shows very graphic videos, which apparently Americans get quite shocked about, and then they have to debrief. And our Australian students are like lying there going, oh, you know, it's like, and after that they think, oh, Patricia, that was so boring. And I'm like, really? And they're like, oh, those girls are all so plastic. And I said, how do you know? Because, you know, the boobs don't jiggle. So, I mean, you know, I learned something. So that's how plastic pornography really is. Airbrushed, you know, unreal. I guess that's what I'm trying to really put to you, is that it is unreality. Pornography is unreality. In real life, things don't happen that way. They don't last so long, they don't look that way, they just don't. So, it's divorced from intimacy. It's like women are always there, available for sex. They have insatiable sexual appetites, which we know in actual research fact women don't. Women actually have to have a contextual lovemaking to be turned on. And that women are always satisfied and rarely, if ever, is safe sex practiced in pornography. This is scary stuff. This is really scary stuff. Research indicates that women who are porn stars, the average lifetime of performance is 3 months. 3 months before burnout. And that a lot of men will say they cannot function without using something like Viagra or Cialis, because in real life they wouldn't do the kind of things that they're asked to do as porn stars. It's really, really frightening. So anything is acceptable in the porn world. Now this one, unfortunately, we can't see, so we skip that one. So what I want to do today is just talk about our God-given pattern of sexual desire, love, and bonding. Just give you a little bit of theory there of how we are created for good, loving sex. And then put on that design what pornography does to it. Now, I am not touching on other issues of gender or of sexual function or of sexual response cycle. We could have a couple of days seminar to do all that, but I'm just going to hone in on what porn does. Sexual desire. Desire is this appetite. It is about I want sex. It is not necessarily I want sex with any particular person or any particular act. It's just this give me sex desire. It's an appetite. Now, God is really, really gracious to have given that to us. Guess what? Imagine if God said, procreate and fill the earth. But I'm sorry guys, it's going to be so boring. It's going to be like filling in your tax return. But it's my charge that you get out there and do it. You know. And then God gave, then we fall in love. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Falling in love is about focusing your energy on one person. Does that sound familiar? You know, a one flesh relationship. We are created, so God gave us this mechanism to focus our energy towards one flesh. And then He gave us another mechanism which keeps us bonded forever after, for eternity. And I think that is so exciting. Each of them has a sort of a chemical background, which I'll go through very briefly for you. Desire, which is like just I'm in the mood for love, kicks in at the right time. It's deep in our brain. For those of you who come from a science background, in like part called the limbic system of our brain, driven by the hormone testosterone. And you know what? Having given us that, and this kicks in when we are reproductively mature in our teens, God didn't just leave us with this ball of, you know, desire. He gave us a control mechanism. And in the frontal part of our brain is this control mechanism. And this is research coming out of secular research. You know, the bad thing about the dual control mechanism, which is like where you say it's like a brake and an accelerator for your desire, the control. You can brake your desire or you can accelerate it. And that's where we say when you take alcohol or drugs, the brake is withdrawn. And that's why you take risks with having a lot of risk taking. And that research comes from Kinsey Institute. That is like my colleagues. And I tell them, you know what, you've just proven something, you know, for us. And they're just very interested when I draw these parallels. This is what I was telling you. I love this cartoon. It's about God saying, be fruitful and increase and fill, subdue the earth. And, you know, Eve saying it seems that Adam hasn't quite grasped this be fruitful thing. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of nice. So, what then about porn? When we say desire, I want sex, what turns us on? What turns this desire on? Do you wake up when you're like 12, 13, 14, and suddenly one morning go, oh, I think I'd like some sex? You know, it doesn't quite happen that way. It's really about scripts. It's about sexual scripts. Read S-C-R-I-P-T without my lisp. Sexual scripts that we build into our brain. Clients whom I have worked with who have seen porn images. And remember when, you know, clients sometimes, some of the clients I see grew up in like when internet porn wasn't that available. It was like they saw the Playboy magazines that their uncle or father had in the house. They would say that those images are seared in their brain. And that is so. Images of pornography, because sex is so powerful as a gift, but just like many powerful things, it is also a very fragile gift. And those images get seared into the brain. Children will say that they remember early images, early actions that were sexual. So, what you feed your brain on, what we feed our children's brains on, what we are feeding our Sunday school and our youth in the churches on, is going to form the script that will influence what turns them on sexually, how they will behave sexually. And if pornography is part of a young person's script, it will be built into their expectations and their attitudes and their values. And today's research does support that. The average age when children see porn today, this is research data, is 11 years. 11 years, and these are children who are all around, and I don't think Christians are in some way kept away from it all, because they are in school, they, you know, getting, I mean, I had one of my students, known which Christian, non-Christian, who emailed me one day and said, you know, in one of our online forum, and said her grandson had come home, 7-year-old, and said, oh, one of the boys had a picture on his phone of a man making love to a donkey. And this is like being passed around 7-year-olds in primary school classroom. Because he was innocent, and he asked him, Mom, what is that? And so they were able to use that as a sort of education forum to discuss it, because they were people who were working in sex education. So I think it's very important, you know, we remember that just because they are Christians, maybe, you know, in a Christian forum, Satan is a constant deceiver. And it will be out there in whatever age you are. I was talking children, but we're talking young people, we're talking adults, we're talking older people who are now getting into the internet a lot. I mean, seniors, it's a very in thing to be into the internet. And, you know, for an older man, where his wife is not sort of particularly sexually turned on, to be at the internet, and, you know, it's a very tempting thing. So we need to remember that there is this thing of, did God really say, after God created our bodies beautiful, God created beautiful bodies, God created beautiful bodies which are part of art, and, you know, they're all out there, so what's been wrong with it? Did God really say? Here are just some of the things that some of the clients have told me. You know, surely, you know, God is not a killjoy. I used to watch when I was a teenager, but I don't do now. I mean, I don't do it now. That's just my wife or my partner thinks that all that time I spend at the computer, you know, I'm really just doing my documents late at night for tomorrow. I mean, I don't do it now. Denial is a very common early symptom of porn use. You use it. Secondly, it's like very occasionally. I just watch only once in a way. You know, it's when I come home and I'm really, really tired. You know, when I've had that really heavy meeting, and I come home and I'm awfully tired, and then the kids are like annoying me, and then, you know, finally everyone's in bed. I just need to relax. And that is when I watch. But, you know, I'm in control of it. And you hear people say, it's normal, isn't it? I mean, doesn't everybody do it now occasionally? These are just, I'm so stressed at work. I deserve something. Can you see how beautifully this comes into the moving sex away from the God-given, beautiful, other-oriented, relational thing into I want to enjoy it for myself? I mean, and the worst that I, as a therapist, see is this, it really helps our lovemaking. And the scary thing is that as sex therapists, up to a few years ago, all of us believed it. We actually used videos in therapy, and I know a lot of my colleagues who still do. I mean, I almost signed off on a student who wanted to look at using porn and its positive effects in sex and relationship. And after watching a couple of videos that she wanted to use, I said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to supervise you in this project. But it was an accepted thing. Even now it's used, that it can be a tool that increases lovemaking and increases pleasure. But again, all the research shows it doesn't. So, that's desire. Be careful what the script that you're building and what script your children and the youth in your church are building. Early information, education, and we'll go back to that later. Falling in love, isn't that the most wonderful thing? I mean, you know, those of you who have fallen in love, and, you know, you just remember that wonderful time when you looked at someone and suddenly those deep, deep areas in your brain, again, for those of you who are biologists, caudate nucleus and nuclear accumbens just lit up like the harbor bridge on New Year's Eve. Wrong state. Okay, so just lights up. with the chemicals we call dopamine and noradrenaline. And then, you know, just sprays it to the brain. And you have this time when you cannot look at anyone else. You're seated at a... In church, you know, there's this wonderful gospel being preached on Romans chapter 1, but all you can do, Romans chapter 1 can be a wonderful message, but anyway, you're making it wonderful. But there's this couple there who are obviously not listening to you, because all they're thinking about is each other and the coffee they're going to have after service. So, you know, it's like this intrusive thinking which takes over your life. You know, the noradrenaline, dopamine are what we call our pleasure and reward systems. The pleasure of being with the person, the longing for the reward of union with this one person. Can you see how wonderful that created pattern is? It is this joyous one flesh that God has created for us. And I mean, this is again coming out of research out of Rutgers University, where they put people into machines and they measure the magnetic resonance imaging machines, and they measure their brain waves while they show them pictures of their loved ones. And you know, it's really quite fascinating research, but it's secular research which is coming out. How our brains are therefore made to focus attention towards a one flesh relationship. They just don't call it that, but that's okay. You know, you obsess, you want to be with that loved one. And you know, it's interesting how porn hijacks this wonderful love mechanism that we are given. Let's talk a little bit about that. So porn hijacks that. What it does is that pornography uses the same mechanism. When you watch porn, it stimulates the same mechanism. So you begin to throw up these dopamines and noradrenalines, and in this process you begin to feel like you are falling in love. The only problem is that you are falling in love with unlovable things, which are images on your screen or on the book. So when we talk of porn high, the porn high is this quick and intense buzz that feels like you're in love. It's that same chemicals. You get this dopamine, noradrenaline spray. Now, what's the difference between that buzz and the buzz of falling in love? Which one takes longer between happiness and pleasure and actual reward? Come on, guys. When did you? How were you able to do the romancing and reach the reward in like 10 minutes? Must have been a very quick romance. It takes time and energy. It takes sacrifice. It takes sacrifice of your time. As one older man once told me, you know, you fall in love and suddenly a meat pie costs twice as much. You know, it involves this expense of money. You know, it's your time, your energy, your money. It's like being with this creature that is like from another planet and, you know, isn't even communicating with you correctly. You can't even read the messages that she or he is giving out to you. But hey, turn on your computer. Here's this readily available woman, or man, by the way, one third of porn users are women. Here is this person who's willing to do anything. It's available, it's just there. It's not a I and thou situation, you know, where you've got to be with the thou, but it's I and it. It will do what I want. Some American, not talking about porn, but in America there are men who actually can't be bothered with women, so they buy a blow-up doll. And there's even been someone who married his blow-up doll because, you know, he had such a good relationship with her, naturally, you know. And of course, porn is readily available. It's just there. I mean, you don't even have to pay for it. You can just go and just click, you know, porn, whatever, and you can just get it up. That easy. It's available. And, you know, it's a use it and dispose it. Dispose of it. And that's that. And of course, it's anonymous. I mean, if you, when you're in your church and you start dating somebody in the church, like everybody knows, the whole youth group is like watching, what's the next step? Whereas here, you know, you just go there, sit in your computer, and it's just you and your computer. So, pornography is therefore using these mechanisms, these systems that God has provided for us. But the point is that this porn high, and we talked about it using this pleasure and reward mechanisms, because of the intensity of the stimulus. See, when you fall in love, it's a gradual process. I mean, even in today's society of casual sex, you still have to go to the bar and buy her a drink and say the right things. And apparently there are classes where you can learn how to seduce at the bar or how to seduce at the races. You know, there's people who are willing to coach you as to how you get a hit in one night or two nights. But still it takes that one night and buying a drink and sitting there and, you know, saying the right things. Otherwise you're an obnoxious oaf and she goes away with someone else or he goes away. But here, the I want can be satisfied really quickly and send your dopamine and noradrenaline levels really high, really fast. That's the thing. You can very fast get that high of being in love in a fraction. And that's scary, but it can be really, really quickly satisfying, this tension build up. But of course, once the tension builds up, you want satisfaction just as quickly. Whereas in the love relationship that we are created for, we were created for a slow walk down the beach. You know, we were created for a slow love process of falling in love. It's like you see that distant scene, beautiful sunset, but you know, you've got all this sort of stuff between and you have to slowly wander through that. However, when you're watching porn, that's not necessary. You get the high of pleasure, the I want, and then you can immediately get the satisfaction. So and again, we're talking men because majority of porn viewers are men, and for those of you who may be meeting people in your parish with problems, likely that there will be more men than women, although, as I said, the number of women who are watching porn are increasing, and for men and for women, the satisfaction comes with masturbating to the pornography. And when you masturbate and you have an orgasm, you have these other chemicals of endorphins and opiates. Again, for those of you who have some sort of medical or even non-medical, you know that these are the sort of satisfaction, the calming chemicals. It's the sort of relaxation that comes after an orgasm. And that is what people really feel. That's the reward that they get. So can you see how this pattern that God gives us of love towards one person, where the achievement of that love relationship is a reward, is twisted here in pornography for a quick satisfaction following this quick I want mechanism. So it's really, really quite scary, because in spite of just being a quick fix, it does use this mechanism. And we talked about the brain being plastic. And this is the real concern. And this is what leads to compulsive porn viewing and even addiction. Remember I talked about this sort of really rough path that has to be walked towards that distant sunset? You know, the first time you see that path and you sort of start just walking down that, you've got to beat your way down, you know, pull all the branches apart and, you know, step over things. But say you do that the second time, it's a little bit easier. And the third time, it's even easier. This is what happens in the brain. That when you keep watching porn, you have what happens, a process addiction. It's really like a drug addiction. It uses the same chemical pathways. More and more we are learning that pornography, compulsive pornography use is becoming like a drug addiction. Not becoming like, it's really using the same mechanisms. So, research shows that like compulsive gambling or shopping, porn use leads to this process addiction. And so, the person becomes addicted to this consuming porn. So that's the behavior. And it actually alters the brain chemistry, the brain thinking patterns. Again, can you see how a pattern, a pathway that was created for good can be hijacked? And so, you know, the internet's there. We talk internet because it's the commonest porn. The internet's there and it provides this plethora of choice. It's a bit like, you know, you go into the, I don't know how it's here when you go into the Porky's, you know, where we have the leagues clubs in Sydney, and you go in there and the downflow is one complete set of those Porky machines, and you can, you know, whatever you go in, those press those things and things happen, and they all look different and they do different things, so you have choice, and you can wander around choosing the best one you want. It's like the ultimate sort of machine for you. So it's like that with porn. You can just wander around looking for the right porn site, what you like, the correct activity which you want, the ultimate fantasy partner do you want. You can put in there, you know, into thing, you know, white girl doing whatever, and it will take you to a particular porn site. So it's like this menu of choice. So, you know, we need, as people working with people who may have concerns with porn, we need to be aware of what is there. And so you can go searching, and just like a slot machine that, you know, you keep, and then suddenly you get a reward, and that then keeps you going, like the Pavlov, like the dog, which occasionally, you know, you get a reward, so after a while, you keep doing it. It becomes this addictive behavior. And so you hit the jackpot, and you're really happy, you've had your reward. Are you with me? I mean, can you see how easy this can be? And it's even more frightening that with time, you know, this thing that gave you a reward, it's not as satisfying. So you want to play for the bigger reward. So the more abusive porn or the more pedophilia, children porn. So it becomes like you want the bigger and the bigger hit. So we have rewired our brains. See, a Christian marriage, as God gives it to us, is founded on, obviously, God's pattern of a one flesh. It's founded on mutual respect, honesty, shared power, shared love, romantic love. Pornography, as it is just the opposite. And you'll all agree, it's about disrespect, not respect. It's about detachment, not attachment to one person. It's about promiscuity, not looking at someone and saying, you are God's partner to me and I love you as you are. And often it is about abuse. Some of the most common pornography now is a pornography, you don't have to memorize this, it's called gonzo porn apparently, which comes out of America, a term, don't know what gonzo means, but it basically means really, really abusive porn. And that is now one of the most popular porn, gonzo, as in G-O-N-E-Z-A. So, what are the effects on an individual? On an individual, people begin to objectify gendered encounters. Why? Your brain has been wired. It's like that distant sunset of wonderful sex now has only one part to it. So you see a woman and your brain registers that pornographic pathway. You think sex, and often the picture is the abusive sex. So you begin to objectify, and again, forgive me for sort of using men as the dominant example, but if it's a man, you begin to objectify a woman as a sexual object, which was never meant to be in the Bible. You know, it was this wonderful human being created to stand by our side and in marriage be this wonderful one flesh forever and typify what will be in eternity as Christ and the Church, instead of which an object. It totally corrupts intimacy. The use of pornography, and this is a really turnaround in sexology, because we used to teach that pornography would strengthen, and now research shows that porn use distorts relationships. It devalues marriage. I mean, you know, and I know there are people who say, oh, I don't mind my partner using porn, you know, as long as he stays faithful to me. You know, something wrong there. But, you know, it devalues and corrupts intimacy. People who keep watching pornography find it really hard to form intimate relationships, because their way of relating in terms of falling in love has been rewired into the quick fix of pornography. And we see the results every day almost. I see Christian couples who come to me. Often it's about a young man who has been a non-Christian and been using porn or having sex, and then now he's become a Christian, got married, but these seared-in behaviors and images are so hard to work with. Maybe a challenge that some of you may be meeting or may in the future meet. So, in a couple relationship, intimacy is affected and relationship is affected. It also affects child rearing. It cannot but affect it when your children look for a role model and the parents have these concerns of pornography use. And fairly recent research, I mean, surprise, surprise, shows that when couples use porn, it's a relationship of sexual dysfunctions, erectile dysfunction in men, premature ejaculation. Of course, you've been watching a picture masturbating, that's a quick ejaculate, so we have sexual dysfunction. So when you are involved in this unreal quick fix pornographic sex, real intimacy becomes really difficult. So, and finally, you're desensitized, and even the shame and the guilt doesn't show. And, you know, young people, just quickly I wanted to tell you a little bit about what the research tells us about the effect on young people. In young people, we find in girls, and this again comes from interviews by Michael Flood, who's working in Wollongong. I think I've got it there. Oh, I've got the other reference, but they all say the same thing. And that is that young girls have what's called, they call it the raunch culture. And this is where a lot of teenagers today see themselves as having to be sexual to be powerful in a male-female relationship. And there's a video again that was a 60 Minutes interview with some young people, where some of the girls are actually saying, our boyfriends want us to make noises like porn stars. Because they're also saying when we make love, and this is like 15-year-old girls. But, you know, boyfriends are watching pornography and saying, you know, behave like a porn star for me. And so girls are saying that they find that the cultural expectation is that they will be sexual. We don't have any data for Australia, but we do know that in America, people, there are parents who pay for their teenage daughters to have breast enhancements for like 18th birthday presents. And this is actually happening, that even parents are playing into, and there's these terms which you guys may never have heard or may never ever hear again. There are things called labioplasties and vaginal reconstructions being done by plastic surgeons to make girls look like Playboy images of genitals. Basically, girls going and saying, I don't like what my genitals look like, I want to look like this, like a porn star. And surgeons willing to actually do those surgery on really quite young girls whose bodies are still developing. But that's this raunch culture that is being signaled by this and the phenomenon of sexting, which we will look at a little bit in one of our scenarios, so I won't discuss them now, we'll keep it for discussion. Boys, this is really, really frightening. I'll put the whole lot and then just talk to it. When you talk of the word on young men, I didn't put the reference there, so I apologize for that. If anyone wants it, I can give it to you. Again, there is this pressure on men, on young boys, feel that the status is through achievement. Because, you know, in the porn, it's about men who can perform, who have lots of women. There is a double standard of female sluts and male studs, because a lot of porn pornography is even marginally abusive, with words being used on women that are really derogatory. And so boys who watch this get used to this. And in fact, I had, don't think he'll mind me saying it, but a young man was talking to me, not Kamal, but also in ministry, and he said that once at Bible study, he had one of these boys from an ethnic background say, "Oh, all girls are dogs." This is like a Bible study. But, you know, it's like the dominant culture. You know, girls are there, ready. Girls are willing. Girls are there. Girls are ready for sex. The pornography teaching us. Women are there. They're always ready. No never means no. No actually means yes. And that's what they're learning. There's a very narrow image of desirability. The perfect airbrushed bodies. The perfect enhanced bodies. Focus on bodies and on sexual acts. Can you see when young men say that it's bodies and sexual acts rather than intimacy? So what it does is it takes, you know, young people lose this ability for friendship, intimacy, sex. And there is a shortcut between boy, girl, sex. There is no friendship. Let's be intimate. Is there intimate? Can we be intimate with and friends without sex? There's no. They don't have a model for it. They don't have a script for it. Because the script they have is about falling in love means if you are love, you have sex. And you have satisfaction, and that's it. I'm sorry if I'm scaring you, but this is what the research is telling us. So let's get a little soft now and talk about what God meant to be in God's pattern for relationship. You see, the research again coming out from Europe and from America tells us that when you stay with a person in an intimate relationship, especially when you have sexual intercourse with a person, doesn't necessarily happen when it's a one-off and you're zonked out of your brain with so many alcohols that you don't know what you're doing and you're lucky you even got an erection. But if you are in the kind of intimate relationship where you have a sexual intercourse of wanting to, and because you're intimate with this person, it picks up hormones that we call the cuddle hormones, oxytocin and vasopressin. And they are hormones that actually cause us to bond at a deep brain level. It's lovely because we have a mechanism that God has given us that helps us to be in a covenant relationship with one person. When God said, "Be with this person forever," and this is the image of the bond that I will have with my church and I will have with my people, that perfect bond that cannot be broken, He gave us a chemical possibility, He gave us a chemical mechanism in our brain to do it. Now, chemical bonding, and as I said, every time you have sex, your oxytocin level, those of you again who have a biological background will think oxytocin, isn't that the one that goes up when a woman is breastfeeding the baby? Correct, because that's how the bonding happens between mother and baby also, the suckling at the breast. Same thing when you have sexual intercourse, surprise, surprise, you bond with the person you're having sex with. I tell young people, therefore, there is nothing called casual sex. When you have casual, quote-unquote, sex, you bond with that person. Why do you think breaking up is so painful? Why do you think when you have sexual intercourse with the person and you break up, why do you think it's so painful? It's because you are bonding. I tell young people, it's like you're super gluing with the person. And when you leave, when you tear apart, you are leaving a little bit of yourself behind in that person, with that person. Some research, not quite substantiated, so I won't sort of put my last penny on it, but there's some research that says that this oxytocin level goes up when you have sexual intercourse. In men it goes up, but it also goes down fairly quickly. But in women it goes up and it stays for a long time, just one sexual intercourse. So you know, you sort of talk, these couples have casual sex, and the guy goes home and he forgets the telephone number of the girl, and like she's sitting there like 2 days after waiting for him to call. So it's often more painful for the girl, that sort of casual sex, but that's not substantiated, but I just like the story. Now, the whole thing about vasopressin and bonding is also that kind of, like, I love the vole story. There's these prairie voles, you know, like little animals, and in them, there's one guy who doesn't have oxytocin and vasopressin, and another prairie vole species that has it, and the one that doesn't have it will be running around making love to every other prairie vole it can find, and the one that has it will find one mate and stay forever. That's how they started looking at oxytocin and vasopressin, and then they do all this, you know, as researchers would do, you know, take the poor prairie vole and inject it with vasopressin into its brain, make it monogamous, and so, you know. And you know, and all these theories now, which are actually, they're looking at the possibility of using oxytocin sprays as something that will increase your sexual desire towards one person. Someone suggested, do you think we can have them in church, and every time you're marrying someone, just, you know, do an oxytocin spray, you know, give them one to take home for the honeymoon, you know, like, just come back totally bonded, okay? I don't want any divorce here. So, you know, so that's what we were created for. And interestingly, sadly, that also then leads us to be tending to bond with a porn star. I have talked to people, and I have read quite a bit around this. There are men have said that they really, you know, they collect videos of a particular porn star, and they won't even loan these videos to anyone else because they are in love with that porn star. It's their girl. Like, hello, she probably created a million videos. How many people are in love with her? But that's how you can bond with this porn star. Why? You're not having sexual intercourse, except virtually. You're masturbating when you watch her do things. And this happens quite a bit now in cyber sex, because there are women whom you can get and do webcam connections with, and there are men who, and women who have webcam connections, and they can, you know, simulate sex together. And so you can fall in love with a porn star, and you can therefore actually bond with the unbondable. And this is the basis of long-term addiction. You know, where a man or a woman is hooked on pornographic material, you keep coming back for more. You come back for more, and it escalates till it takes over your life. This is when it moves into the addiction. It becomes a porn addiction. And you know, the kind of people you will see are probably not, and I'm saying probably because maybe they will be, but probably not at this sort of crazy addiction phase. They're probably at either casual users or maybe even compulsive, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But addiction means that a person is just cannot live without it. They are distressed by it, but they cannot live without it. It affects their relationship, their job, their parenting skills. They don't attempt to use all their money. It just affects every part of their life. It's like, you know, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, gambling, any addiction. Hopefully you won't see, and the extreme part of pornography addiction would be that people get desensitized, like we talked earlier, and they would go in for deeper and deeper and more abusive and shocking pornography. And finally, they would be desensitized to all this, and they would actually want to act out sexually. And this is the very extreme, but pretty much, you know, we still don't quite know. There's research showing, there's some people who are like researching to show that there is no connection between sexual violence. But we do know that there is a connection between porn use, especially in younger people, as I showed you earlier, and an acceptance of rape myths. What's a rape myth? The rape myth is like what I said earlier, you know, when a girl says no, she actually means yes. A girl is always ready for it. Girls are basically sluts. When a girl dresses to show her body, she is asking for it. The rape myths. There is a connection between pornography use and the acceptance of rape myths. But we don't have a definite, you know, relationship proven. But everybody who's working in the area is sort of thinking, there's got to be, you know, there's got to be. But we don't know. Okay. So,